a change. You may get disgusted.
Welcome back. It is June 21st, Season 2, Episode 50 of the Let Me Be Frank podcast. Brian and Pete are here with you. You may have noticed we took a week off. It's summer hours here, you know. Can't always make everything happen throughout the summer, but we are back. And before we get into the big topics we have this week, just wanted to mention Justify won the Triple Crown and the lead up to the U.S. Open. But great segue by me is the U.S. Open has come and gone. Shinnecock was a monstrously difficult course throughout the weekend up until Sunday after a couple guys had cried about it. And the winning Brooks Koepka wins back-to-back U.S. Opens, select group, and one over, I believe, was his score to win it. So yep. Just shows the course really dominating these guys throughout the weekend.
And you know what? I don't get why people are so upset about when a course dominates a tournament, because to me, it's more entertaining to see a pro golfer look like me on a yeah. golf course.
It's the most relatable golf ever is. The U.S. Open every single year makes every golfer relatable because you see bad tee shots, you see bad approach shots, you see bad chip shots, bad putts, and you're like, yeah, I've done that before. Absolutely, 100%. But I don't think golf was any more approachable than the moment when Phil Mickelson put the ball, missed the hole, ran down, putted again before it had stopped rolling, taking a two-stroke penalty, and putting up a 10 on the 13th hole, I believe it was.
Yeah, and the golf purists just absolutely lost their minds.
So let's get into it. Does he disrespect the course? Does he disrespect the game? Do people have a right to bitch about it?
I mean, 150%. This is one of the biggest tournaments. No, I have no idea. I can't even pretend to, like, he wasn't in the running.
Right.
It's like getting pissed off at a Phoenix Suns game if Devin Booker decides to shoot 45 times by himself and just completely ignores teammates. Who cares? It has no bearing on what the actual competitive aspect of the tournament is.
So if you take away the fact that it was Kobe's last game, if you just single out that game, it doesn't matter. It means nothing. And he's taking 60 shots in the game. It's the same thing as Phil. I'm a very, very verbal anti-Phil guy. You know this. The listeners know this. Everybody knows this. I'm 100% on Phil's side. It is outrageous that these golf people, Andy North said something along the lines of, he let down the millions of kids that are watching him. No, he just leveled with the millions of kids that are watching him. They're like, oh my God, a professional golfer does the stupid shit I do on the course. This is awesome. Way to go, Phil. Never been a bigger Phil guy than right now in my life.
You know what I would have thought was even better? If he just, like, he's like, fuck it, just left that ball. And was like, looked at his case, like, throw me another one. And just forgot about the first one, took a second one.
Just takes a mulligan right there.
Yeah, there we go. That was the read. And just knocks it in.
He handled the media well, which he tends to do. But claiming that it was a loophole that he found in the rule book is, first off, it's an unbelievable cover. What a great cover story right there. But there's just no way in hell he knew that and was really willing to take that chance. It was pure frustration, one of those things where you're playing so shitty. It's your birthday, nonetheless, and you just want to get the hell out of there. Like, you're not in contention. It's going to cost you a couple grand, sure, but what's the harm in that when you're filled with insider trading and all that stuff?
Yeah, he's already set up on that. It, like, this weekend, it kind of reminded me, like, isn't it kind of a helpless feeling for professional golfers that the – you could just be completely dominated at your like craft, just by the fact that they make a course too hard.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the only sport where they literally the playing field can determine if you're successful or not?
Yes, I'm trying to think.
Tennis. I think tennis is the second highest.
Yeah, tennis definitely is up there. It's the bougie white people sports. That's what it comes down to. Like, that's the only way to put it. Like, the horse track, horse racing, sure, the conditions can absolutely cause issues. But, yeah, I think golf especially, though, it's like, you know, God-given talent can't let you win. Like, basketball, LeBron's going to win more often than he's going to lose, strictly because he has the God-given talent, whether or not his team is there with him or whoever. But in golf, you can be like Dustin Johnson is the best golfer in the world right now, and he got absolutely throttled on Saturday and Sunday at Shinnecock.
Yeah, and I don't get how he fell off the field. Like, if like they really made the course easier after a few people bitched, I don't get how he just fell off the face of the earth there at the end.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I'm not 100% confident in what goes on with like the whole. I don't pay attention to the hole placements and things like that, and what they decided and talked about through Saturday into Sunday. I mean, if bigger golf fans than I would probably know, and you could probably look back on Twitter and find something, but it's one of those things where, you know, just move the hole from middle of the green or front of the green to the back of the green, and all of a sudden it's a way simpler hole because you've got so much extra space to work with.
Those Sunday hole selections.
Yep, unbelievable. Back at it again. But this tournament was very difficult. A lot of big names missed the cut, including Tiger, Rory, Jordan Spieth. Bunch of big names not there. And, you know, it's made another major championship for Brooks Koepka. Let's see if he can keep it going. Three in a row.
I like to see. I mean, it's kind of intimidating to see a golfer who's that jacked continue to win.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I like keeping it to just Phil and Tiger, but
it feels very anti-golf.
Yeah,
having muscular, like in shape specimens winning the game.
I want to know that while I am just drinking beers and being a degenerate on a mm-hmm. golf course, I don't want to see my professionals in this field looking like they're the peak of athletic ability.
Golf and like the figure of a relief pitcher in baseball are like the two most relatable American things we have right now, and we're losing both of them rapidly.
Yeah, you really hate to see like the fat relief pitcher is just it's such an integral part of relatability.
Take away how hard they throw the ball, and you're that guy. That's you on a beer league night every Friday or whatever it is.
Yeah, I see three of those guys every time I play softball.
Exactly. So that's exactly what it is. With that all said, we'll move on to the NBA draft.
They should do a sports science on how beer guts help you in baseball / softball.
I love that.
Because I'm convinced that it puts so much more force behind a swing in softball.
Very anti sports science as well, but I would watch that 100%.
Yeah, I mean, we can kill John Brinkus, but we'll bring someone else. Like, someone else can do it.
Right. John, you're on the hot seat. NBA draft time. The draft is today if you're listening. Tomorrow as we record. The Bulls have the 7th and 22nd picks in the draft. I wrote about it earlier this week at letmebefrankblog.com. They're projected to get Wendell Carter. What do you think the odds are that they actually take him? Let me rephrase it. Who do you think is going to be their pick?
I'm hoping, I don't think it's likely, but I'm hoping Michael Porter Jr. falls to that spot.
Really?
I think they'll jump on him there, but I was on the Mo Bamba Michael Porter Jr. camp for a long time. I started Mo Bamba, then his stock just rose
way too quickly,
significantly, through the draft process. And I think he's going to get snagged by Dallas at 5, or I forget who's at 6. But I don't think he's going to be there at 7 for us.
Who is that? I can't think of who's 6.
It might be
Utah,
Brooklyn. No, Brooklyn's 8. I'm not sure, but
right. Well, Cleveland's 8.
Yeah, Cleveland's 8, so it could be Brooklyn. I don't know.
Yeah, so but yes, I understand what you're saying.
So yeah, I mean, I'll be fine with Wendell Carter. He's he'd be a decent front court mate to pair with Lowry. But
I think, I mean, if you're looking at this draft,
we got to go with the Tyrese Thomas like pick. As bad of a precedent as that is, we just got to go for the guy with the highest ceiling.
I don't know if I agree with that. I think you got a draft for positional need at this point, and Mo Bamba is the only guy that fits exactly what you need. And I think you got to do whatever you can to go up and get him.
I mean, I don't think we're talented enough at this point to draft for positional need to just like pick and put someone in a slot. I feel
neither
like,
do I, but I think getting Lowry and Mo Bamba locked down, and then you can figure out your guard situation later. That's, I mean, that's enough right there. And if you want to trade Chris Dunn, I'm sure there's a team in the first round still that's willing to give up a pick, and you can go get a, either a guard or a wing that'll be available.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that the only reason why I'm so in the Michael Porter Jr. camp is that I don't think – I firmly believe that Mo Bamba will not be there at seven.
Yeah, and I agree with you.
And I don't know if I trust Garpax to have the balls to trade up. The only thing I've seen floated is flirting with the Grizzlies number four pick. And if they do make that deal, I would love to see them take Doncic and if he falls.
Oh, God. No, he's going number two for sure. I'm going to guarantee that. I thought he was going to go number one early on, like the Suns were enamored with him, but Ayton is the clear-cut number one pick. It is,
I mean, according to Zach Lowe, Vlade Divac hates Doncic as a prospect. So I unless they're trying to do a smokescreen here, which I don't think Vlade is capable of, like knowing what a smokescreen is, other than like cigarette smoke. I don't know if the Kings are very privy to take him. Is that the right word?
Yeah,
use of that.
I think that works. Six is Orlando, by the way.
Okay, right. And they'll be incompetent and take someone.
Trae Young, hopefully. As long as, okay, this is my biggest fear. Trae Young is going to be on the board still when the Bulls pick.
Yep.
And they're going to take him. But then they're going to go out and trade Chris Dunn and get like a second round pick or a late first or something instead of grabbing, you know, the 13th pick from the Clippers or whatever we can get for him.
I mean, I've seen. There are people are so hard line, either love Trae Young or they just like, all right, don't expect him to be like, we just try and anoint these guys who can shoot off the dribble from three as the next Steph Curry. And I think it's a fruitless effort because Steph Curry is unbelievable.
One of a kind.
That being said, I don't like Trae Young for non-basketball reasons. I think his voice is annoying and his hair is awful.
Thank you, Ms. Doris. I like Trae Young as a prospect in terms of basketball, but he's not at all what the Bulls need. They don't need a non-defensive shooting point guard right now when they've got a guy that can be an all-league level defender in Chris Dunn. And if he can polish up his offensive game, or, you know, if they can add some shooters to this team and really spread the floor, he can get to the rim and get some points. That said, I don't know. It could be a smokescreen. It could be something else that Garpax don't really like. Or the team, the quote was like, the team is not thrilled with Chris Dunn's work ethic or something along those lines. So who knows? Trouble in paradise, maybe.
And you know what? I have a hard time believing anything that's coming out of the Bulls camp right now, because it criticizes Garpax as much as we do. I haven't seen a thing really come out of the Bulls camp, like leak, that's actually like seemed credible. So I feel like it's been a pretty tight ship.
Now, it's funny you say that, because it's a great segue to the 22nd pick, where all signs point to the Bulls guaranteeing Chandler Hutchison.
Yeah, I heard that
to get drafted, which we knew this was going to happen with one of these two picks. And I think everyone is thankful that it's the 22nd pick instead of the 7th, where Garpax gets their guy, 4-year guy out of Boise State. He's a decent 3-point shooter, not great. He's got decently good size, not an over the top, you know, good defender, team leader kind of dude out there. But they're going to go out and get their prototype.
You know what? Like, for the application on the Bulls website for players, they just list like bachelor's degree preferred for incoming players.
Oh, God.
And in finance or other business related. But you know what? It makes me feel better, though. I've been getting pretty self-conscious and insecure looking at the birth years of the guys getting drafted. I'm seeing 1999. So Chandler Hutchinson's a 96. I can live with that.
For sure.
But yeah, the guys who were born 99, it makes me scared for the next year for 2000s.
Honestly, I genuinely do appreciate this from Garpax. They're going to make a shitty pick. We knew it. We needed them to do it early. And I guess I can't anoint it shitty. I'll call it shitty because of all the talent that is going to be available. Younger, more athletic guys than Chandler Hutchison. That's not to say his career won't be good. There just haven't been good examples of on the Bulls of late. Denzel Valentine is God knows where at this point in his career. But who knows? Maybe Hutchison will break the mold, but it's nice of them to not make us sweat out who we're going to take at 22, especially if someone starts falling. You know, let's say Miles Bridges or someone like that starts falling towards 22. It's great to not have to wonder, oh, are we going to take him? What's the deal? No. We've already got our guy.
It's frustrating, though, because I feel like the Bulls situation, I feel like you got to take as many home run swings as possible.
Oh, absolutely. Because
that's the way you have to do in the NBA. Talent wins out every time. And they seem very hesitant to do it do consistently at least. They might be gun shy after the Tyrus Thomas deal blew up in their face.
Have the Bulls ever drafted a guy out of Kentucky?
Not in my knowledge.
Right. Why aren't we taking a swing on anybody?
I would love to see Kevin Knox, but we're too early on the seventh pick and too late in the 22nd.
So this is what I was thinking. You trade up for Bamba, package 7 and 22 together, and then drop back to like 13 or something with Chris Dunn and take Kevin Knox with that pick. There you go. You got your wing, you got your center, you got your four. You just need a guard at this point.
Yeah, I definitely don't hate it.
Gar, give me a call. I'll help you out, but we're also still selling shirts. They're $10, so let us know if you're interested.
We will cease selling these shirts if you pick up our phone call.
Yep. Any other NBA draft news other than Ted Cruz is probably on the Bulls board somewhere?
He's hitting shots in the face of Jimmy Kimmel.
He's a winner too.
Did you watch that thing?
No, I couldn't stomach it.
For the sake of the podcast, I did some research and I watched about 10 minutes of it.
Excellent.
My God.
I heard it was 5-5 after an hour.
Yeah, it's everything you imagine that, like, if our dads played one-on-one.
Mm-hmm.
Just the Stanley dribbling with the one hand, like the chicken arm going out to the side.
Oh, man.
I mean, Ted Cruz was surprisingly smooth. He had this smug... Oh my God, this fucking smug waltz or walk that he had after every time he'd make a jump shot. That
dude, Jimmy.
I wanted to hit him in the face so hard. But and Jimmy just looked awful. He was the one dribbling like Stanley.
It's a bad look for Jimmy Kimmel. I mean, granted, he never claimed he was athletic. Actually, this is probably the worst possible look for UNLV. The basketball program's kind of starting to get back on the rise. They're going to have a first-round pick this year in Brandon McCoy. And now you've got Jimmy Kimmel going out there and losing to Ted Fuckball.
Yeah, the side angle of Jimmy Kimmel is much less flattering than the angle he gets on the late-night show. He looks trim in a suit on late night, and he had the belly going.
That he really doesn't hide much.
No. And they took a timeout and a halftime. They had like NBA amount of breaks in this game to 11.
That's so disheartening. I might have to go watch it now just to see how bad it was.
I mean, Guillermo is worth it on his own. He's sideline interviewing. He was Doris Burke for the day.
He's a legend. The World Cup has been going on. In case people didn't notice. Indeed. The Russians and the Uruguayans are through. Egypt is out, and so is Saudi Arabia. Both teams lost. Today, as we're recording, 6 points, 6 points, 0 points, 0 points. You're out of there with one game left for those teams. But this has been the year of goals. The over is hit very often. I think it's over 50% right now. And this has been the year of the upset with Iceland tying Argentina 1-1 in their first ever game in the World Cup. We've got Mexico beat Germany 1-0. I can't even read my own handwriting. Brazil and Switzerland tied 1-1. Japan 2-1 over Colombia. And Senegal beat Poland 2-1. So lots of upsets, lots of goals. This, I feel like people say this every year, but this has legitimately been like the most entertaining World Cup. If you've been able to watch the games, anytime there's like a slight, like a one goal, two goal difference in the last 15 minutes, you just see a team full on press offensively, and it opens things up and gets so exciting.
Yeah, and even though the U.S. team isn't in the running, I still find myself gravitating to the tournament again.
Yes,
I think it's even more fun.
Yes, I was going to say that.
No, I'm. This is a different point. It's okay. More fun to pick a random country.
Right,
but I don't have a rooting interest. No, nowhere where my family is from is in
gambling this interest.
Yeah, or gambling, but. I think it's more fun to root against the teams that your friends are from. Like, I have many friends from Poland who were losing their minds over the losing to Senegal, and it was way more entertaining than I expected it to be.
Yeah, it's kind of fun. It's way more fun, I should say, not having a team that you have to like, okay, the U.S. plays at 6 a.m. on Thursday. Like, we have to get up and watch this. Or, you know, oh, we need, you know, they need to win this game so that they go on. And if they lose, like, why do I even care about watching? It's way better not having your team in it, strictly from a viewing standpoint of like every game is interesting. Every game is exciting. Cheer against the big teams, you know, things like that.
Yeah. And should we be testing Russia for the, well, this is kind of a given for those PEDs.
Yeah. It's funny how they get the easiest group, and I use that phrasing intentionally because every chick in the world has used that. I think it's funny how when something not funny is coming up, but it's very funny how Russia gets the easiest group in the entire tournament, drops a 5 spot on Saudi Arabia because, of course, and then beats Egypt 3-1. The Russians are a wagon right now. They're dropping in more goals than their hockey team did in the Olympics, and honestly, if you're a hockey player in Russia not named Ovechkin, I think you've got to be a little concerned.
Odds that Putin just decides to suit up for game 3 for the Russians? Because yeah. he loves to do it for the hockey teams.
How about him sitting with the king of Saudi Arabia as they're just destroying his team? And every time they score, he just gives them a Jordan shrug. Like, oh, I don't know. We're just that good.
The smugness on that man's face.
Incredible stuff. But Russia's been playing well. Uruguay's surviving. Spain will be interesting to see how they do moving forward. They're one of the tournament favorites. Brazil, Neymar is injured. He got fouled something like 15 times against Switzerland. Something insane. 10 times maybe. Japan, like we said, upset Colombia. Senegal upset Poland. Both teams, I believe, are in the top 10 in the world. So a lot of crazy stuff happening.
Ronaldo is absolutely rolling.
Yeah, Ronaldo has 4 goals. He had a hat trick against Spain, including a set piece to equalize late. That's soccer terms for you right there. I studied up.
I had my head spinning for a little bit there. luckily, I watched the game, so I actually knew what you were talking about.
Here's the thing. This is what I was thinking of the other day. And I had a couple people who are like huge soccer fans on my Twitter timeline getting pissed about it, but I don't understand how there's a conversation of who's better between Messi and Ronaldo. Like, Messi is 5'7". Like, sure, he's incredibly gifted. There's no doubt about it. He is one of the greatest players in the world. But when you watch how Ronaldo can take over a game, how is he not the best? Like, he has willed his country to the top 10 ranking in the world. And if you look at that team, there are very few competent players with him.
Yeah. And I've heard it. I'm sure you've heard the same comparison. It's like the LeBron versus Steph Curry.
Yeah.
I feel like it's a similar argument in Messi versus Ronaldo.
Worst part is I'm reading all these why Ronaldo isn't the GOAT tweets. And I'm like arguing in his defense. And then I think about it and it's the exact same things I say about LeBron all the time. And I'm like, fuck. So, but
you find yourself on the other side of the coin this time.
He's incredible. I was never a Ronaldo guy. I just thought Messi was more relatable because he's, you know, the shorter guy. He seems like super humble and quiet. Ronaldo's A, a good looking dude, but B, he can fucking swing up and down the field and score. So he's been a lot of fun to watch. Hopefully Messi comes out and shuts me up after we record this, because there's nothing better than getting proved wrong. But Ronaldo looks really good right now.
Yeah, I'd love to see it. I'm still bitter that I didn't get to see Messi when I was in Barcelona because he had that fucking broken arm.
Very sad. Very unfair.
Yeah, very unfair. Only got to see Neymar.
We're Team Iceland, right? We're 100% Icelandic now.
Oh, absolutely. I'm down for Iceland.
Yep. I don't even give a shit about the clap. These guys, there's a dentist that is their manager, and most of these guys just started playing like professionally the last couple of years. The smallest country in the world to ever qualify.
Can I tell you a dumb thought I had initially about the World Cup?
Yes, I'd love to hear it.
When I first was hearing matchups, I was imagining where they were playing as if like it was like Mario Soccer and they were playing in like their home. Like I was imagining Saudi Arabia and like a sandy field and like Iceland and like Iceland and like a snow and like snowy conditions. And I'm like, they're all in the same place.
Oh God, that is awesome. The other big news coming out of soccer is that the US, Canada, and Mexico have got the joint bid for 2026, and the final is going to be in New Jersey. So we have all these beautiful places around these three countries to pick, and we take New Jersey.
What was the reason behind that? Do you have any idea here?
From what I read a couple things that said the governor of New Jersey used to be like in the U.S. Soccer Federation or knows people up front, and MetLife is, you know, a big, nice stadium and all sorts of stuff. So it just kind of made sense. But I would have preferred to see it in like Mexico City in Estadio Azteca or up in like Vancouver or somewhere nice, you know, not East Rutherford, New Jersey.
And I can't wait to see the foreigners coming in and say, oh, like so close to New York. We'll just go back and
forth. The game's in New York. It's where the New York Giants and Jets play. It's like, no.
Mm-mm.
You're going to take either a train or a car out, and it's going to be shitty because you're going to be sitting in traffic.
It's New York, like, plus depression and way less nicer things.
Yep, that is East Rutherford, New Jersey, to a T. But we will move on here to our top five. Top five this week is more disrespectful things that Phil Mickelson could have done than play his ball before it stopped moving. So, Pete, I will let you go first. What do you got?
Okay, so I don't know if this was situationally at the putt itself or just in general at the tournament.
Sure.
So I took some liberties. First one I've written down here, let them titties breathe. Just go shirtless.
I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah, just go pull it. Well, I don't know if John Daly did that, but just go shirtless on the course.
Seems like something he'd do.
Just absolutely stomp on his partner's line right after the putt, just out of frustration.
Yep.
Like much like Bovar does to my lines every time we golf together.
Yep.
Three, just get hammered after he realized that he was out of the tournament. Just love black that. Out.
Would love that move.
Two, have a completely different financial institution's hat on. Just a slap in the face.
Oh. Did you see the Donald Duck hat video? Yeah. That was incredible.
He was being a bro about that.
Love that. I mean, this is Phil went from public enemy number one to like, okay, he's not that bad, maybe. Relatable. In the span of a weekend.
Hey, you know what? I've loved him just strictly because he's also a lefty. But if you're gonna come around to him because of this stuff, I'm all for it. And then
we'll see.
And then number one, just I already mentioned this before, just completely forget about that first ball, pretend it didn't happen, drop another one, just shoot it again.
Love that. Love that move as well. We've all been there where golf ball just happens to fall out of your pocket. You can't find it over in the trees. Oh, it's right here, guys. Thanks.
No, weren't you shooting a Titleist? No, this top flight right here. It's
top flight four. Remember, I had the mark on it with the marker. It was like a quarter circle. My five are, he could have worn shorts. Number five is wear shorts. For whatever reason, it seems like that's very frowned upon on the tour. Number four.
I don't get why it is frowned upon.
I don't get it either. Number four is he could have just not fixed his divots, just completely walked past. Forgotten about him and left it up for the other guys. Number three, instead of a golf clap, he could have gone with a full thunderous clap. Really, really disrupt the golf gods. Number two, he could have pulled a Happy Gilmore and thrown his club after that putt instead of, you know, chasing it down and trying to hit it again.
And is that even technically against the rules? Do you get like a stroke penalty for that?
Probably not. It's just probably you get a stern talking to from Doug at the tour.
You just get the tournament official just gives you like just brings you over with the
yep. It's like it's like the soccer ref. He calls you over and then just like emphatically waves his arms. Probably doesn't say anything. Like you've got to stop.
The golf official somehow pulls out a yellow card out of his pants. Yeah. Like I didn't even know we had these things.
And on the 16th hole, Phil has been given a yellow. Tough to see. Let's see if he can finish out these last two without picking up a red.
He can no longer use his 6-iron for the rest of the round. That's his penalty.
Yep. And number one is just fake your scorecard. You know, pretend like, oh, I forgot about those couple strokes I took back there. So I got myself marked down as a 7, guys. I don't know where you're getting 10 from.
That last one was good, right? Okay.
Yeah. So. We're playing breakfast ball, I thought.
Yeah, we got a couple points we made on that one.
Those are our 5. Let us know what you got there. Dozens upon dozens of more things that Phil could have done that were more disrespectful. Mention us at LMBF Sports with whatever you think on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We'll move on to our stats. I've got 3. One of them is outdated as of now because we didn't record, but I still think it's an interesting one. And it was Jason Hayward's first Cubs walk-off Grand Slam. They walk-off Grand Slam a couple weeks ago. It was the first hit by the Cubs while trailing since Ron Santo did it September 25th, 1968. That's the epitome of a baseball stat.
Wait, what?
It is the key. So this was the first Cubs walk-off Grand Slam while trailing.
Oh, wow.
Since Ron Santo. So they've hit walk-off Grand Slams with the game tied. But the first time they've been losing and hit a walk-off Grand Slam to win since 1968.
Wow.
That is why we created this segment. That right there.
That's incredible.
I got 2 Mike Trout stats. He's played 997 career games. I don't know if that's accurate at this point. He's reached base safely in 861 or 86.4% of games.
That's better than many people's Little League on base percentage.
And the last one I will retweet from the main account, but Pat Mahomes, 360 degree fantasy football, tweeted out pictures of Riley Curry on Steph's lap and Pat Mahomes and said, "Remember Steph Curry's daughter, Riley? Feel old yet?" And Mahomes' response was, "First 0 from holes, now this. Come on." And no. It's truly incredible to see how similar they look.
God.
Pete, what do you got?
All right, I just have one. It's a did you know fun fact type thing, less of a stat. When Sweden and Denmark played each other in the World Cup, the letters that are used for the teams are SWE and DEN, together spelling Sweden, and the remaining letters which are not used are DEN and MARK, which spells Denmark.
Gotta love it. That's Scandinavia there for you. They are so in unison up there.
Seamless.
Yep. Really, truly incredible. Remarkable stuff. We can move on to our tweets. Pete, what do you have here?
All right. I have a few tweets. First of all, this is a tweet going along with the video. Nick Young advocating for the legalization of cocaine.
Yes.
Just out of the blue, just completely unprompted, which I think was the funniest part about this. This TMZ reporter is just walking up to him. Nick looked hammered walking out of some club. Go ask him about Canada legalizing marijuana, and Nick goes straight, you know what? Yeah, we gotta legalize cocaine.
Love the move. Take it one step higher, because then if you get the whole place working on legalizing cocaine, it's like, okay, well, why don't we just settle at marijuana and then everyone's happy?
Yeah, if you go way above and beyond, like, go crazy, and it's like in negotiations, you just go way high, and they're like
20. Yeah, 2048, we're going to be negotiating for the legalization of like meth or crocodile or something. And then they're like, okay, well, let's just settle at heroin and call it a day.
Yeah, middle ground. I respect the shit out of him for establishing that middle ground. And then he responded with a tweet saying, "Y'all know me, I just say shit." That's it.
Oh my God.
It's also hilarious that he censored the word shit while he legalized, while responding to something where he advocated for legalizing cocaine.
Love the censorship there. Yeah. Really top notch stuff.
And then, all right, so I have two more. Kevin Knox, this is from Fisher, scout, or I don't know what team he works for, but Kevin Knox says one team interview at the combine pressed him if he had a child. Knox was surprised, obviously replying no. The team asked again, saying their intel had learned he had a child. Knox asked them for the kid's name, and the team finally relented, admitting it was a hoax. This has to be the Bulls.
Yeah, this seems like something they'd do. They probably let it was probably Gar on his own talking to him. He just wanted to cross Kevin Knox off his draft board, but had to have reason to do so. It's like, oh, this guy's not truthful with us. He said, you know, he told us he didn't have a kid, but we know he does. This is why you cross him off the list.
Can you imagine the reaction after there's like, all right, fine.
Oh, you got us.
Just cross the question off the list.
Unreal.
And then last one, the Jazz Instagram account commenting MJ pushed off on the MJ game winning shot Instagram post that the Bulls made on its 20th anniversary.
He still made it though.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, true. But I thought it was hilarious. Just so petty. 20 years later,
it is. I realized I read the Pat Mahomes tweet in the stats section instead, so I'll give you my last Mike Trout stat. Excuse me. In his last 8 games, he's hitting .696 with a .778 on base percentage and a 1.261 slugging. Last 30 games, .402 average, .527 on base, and .824 slugging. Last 55 games, .361, .502, .743. Last 65 games, .361, .498, .735. In his last 162 games, he's hitting .309, .455, and .641. So Mike Trout's pretty good at baseball.
That's not bad.
Not bad. Not bad at all. As always, what are you looking forward to this weekend?
World Cup for sure. Yep. I'm hoping I can get myself to wake up early enough for these games on the weekend. The Sweden versus Germany games should be interesting because this is basically a must win for Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Poland versus Colombia because I have friends.
Losers out, most likely.
Yeah, and I have rooting interests in both sides for Poland versus Colombia. Friends who have rooting interests. So what about you?
I'm also looking forward to the World Cup. I am looking forward to vacation. I'm going on a vacation for the first time in God knows how long. So, Charleston, South Carolina, here we come.
Hello, Gamecocks.
Yeah, go Cox. I'm going to tweet at Darius Rucker, see if he wants to meet up at all. Maybe get him on the show for next week. But that is our show. Let us know what you think at letmebefrankblog.com, at LMBF Sports, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Look us up, subscribe, leave a review. Any final words?
No, I'm going to go eat.
All right, don't pick Trae Young. Let's go Bulls.
Bulls.
Once a year I'll see them for a week or so at most. I should go on.